I wouldn't want to say that it was inevitable, but the chances were quite high that somehow we would find a way of whatever the parsha was this week of fitting it into Pesach, with Pesach coming so close. So I do plead guilty to that. So let's start at the first source. Vizot Torat HaMincha. So now we're moving on to another type of a korban. The korban over here is the korban mincha. As we saw last week when we discussed Kain Behevel, we saw that the very first offering that was ever offered was in fact the mincha. Vehirim mimenu bekumtso misolat mincha umishamna ve'al kol olvona asher al mincha v'iktir mizbech reich nechoch azkarata l'Hashem. So it goes into some details exactly what was brought together with it. V'hanotari meni ochlu aron v'anav matzot te'ochel b'makom kodesh b'chatzar o amoed yachlua. So here we have what we were looking for. It says that it was to be eaten matzah. Now again, let's be honest. For most of us, the concept of matzah, or for that matter chametz, are concepts which are, I'm afraid to say exclusively, but pretty much exclusively Pesach concepts. So over here, lo and behold, we find that the way that this particular korban, the mincha, was to be in matzot. Now, just in case you think that that's just some kind of coincidence, the next pasuk says, lo te'afeh chametz. No. On the one hand, it has to be matzah. On the other hand, it can't be chametz. So, as I said, we find over here a consideration of matzah and of chametz, and as I said, that maybe we are somewhat surprised. Now, I'm going to say something which is inexact, so you don't have to tell me it's inexact, because I'm going to try to say something inexact in as an exact way as I can say it. As a general rule, the Beit HaMikdash is a place which only has matzah and doesn't have chametz. Now, as I said, as a general rule, I left myself enough room over there for the times where it's not the general rule, which means it's a general rule other than the one or two exceptions which exist, and we will see the exceptions as we move on. So therefore, again, I'll say it again, other than the exceptions, the general rule is, as is represented by this pasuk over here, that over here the mincha should be something which is matzah. The use of the word matzah is a very specific use over here, because what does it say in the next pasuk? It should be matzah, but it shouldn't be chametz. So therefore, this concept of chametz or matzah is found right over here. Now, I'm going to introduce something which I'm going to get a little carried away, and I apologize for that. And I'll apologize afterwards as well. On a theological level, there is this general consensus, and we'll see in a second where it comes from. There is this general consensus that matzah represents, in somehow, some level, something which is pure, while chametz represents something which is impure. The best place to see that is in source number 2. This is really the source, and we'll need Rashi as well. The Gemara in Brachot says, Ika de Amri, Harav Hamnuna Matzlila. Rav Hamnuna, when he would pray, this would be the prayer they would say. Rabbi Alexandri Bato de Matzli, at the end of his prayer, this is what he would say. Amar Hachi, here is the prayer. Ribon Ha'olamim, Master of all worlds. Galuy V'yadua Lefanecha, it is revealed and known to you. Sheritzoneinu Lasat Ritzonecha, that our real will is to do your will. Umima Akev, so therefore what holds us back from doing your will? So'or Shebi Isa, it is the leavening agent within the dough, which means the Sa'or Shevi Isa is the thing which makes it chametz. It's the, if you want, we can call it yeast, but it's what the relation between this yeast and the yeast we use today may be incidental, but it's Sa'or Shevi Isa. What exactly is this saying to us? Sa'or Shevi Isa, it's telling us that the thing which makes something puffed up is the problem. By the way, the Gemara continues. It's not just an internal issue. It's also, there's an external factor, v'shiyabud malchiyot. And it's the fact that we're under dominion of other nations. Yehi ratzon melfanecha, Hashem Elokeinu, shetatzilenu miyadam, v'nashuv alasot chi ratzonecha b'lav shalem. It's interesting, the prayer, God, may you save us from their hands, which goes to the shibud malchiyot, the ones who are causing a situation that doesn't really give us our freedom, but also belevav shalem, that we can serve you with a full heart, which seems to go back to this idea of the Sa'or B'Isa. Rashi over here says, umi ma'akev, what holds us back? She'einanu osim ritzoncha, why is that we're not doing the will of God? Sa'or Shabi'isa, yetzer hara shebelvavenu, hachmi senu. It is the Yetzer Hara, which is in our heart, which means over here we see, Rashi understand the Gemara, and again, I don't have to, you know, give points for Rashi, but Rashi is correct. This is what the Gemara means. The Gemara means the thing which holds us back is the Sa'or Shebi'isa. Rashi understands the Gemara that what Sa'or Shebi'isa means over here, that it is the Yetzer Hara. So the thing that prevents us from serving God properly, Yetzer Hara, that's what makes us haughty, that's what makes us full of ourselves, that again, puffed up, and so on. So I have a very simple question then. If this is the case, and I'm sorry for asking this, I apologize for asking this, and let's make sure this doesn't get out of this room in any way, otherwise we'll have a new chumra very soon. My question is, if that's the case, if chametz is connected to the Yetzer Hara, why is it ever allowed? If chametz is connected to the Yetzer Hara, shouldn't it be allowed all year? Which means if you were to tell me that somehow pig is somehow symbolic and of something which is really negative, it's not that, you know, you can eat it therefore once a week, or no, we can't eat it. Now, you'll come back and say, well, it's really a chok, and so on. But over here, if the Gemara is really serious about this, if the Gemara really wants to insist that the Sa'or Shebi'isa, the thing which makes something into chametz, that is associated with the Yetzer Hara, then I would have to ask myself, so why is it only one day a week? So now, I want to partially respond and say, one week a year. Now, I want to partially respond and say, well, then it becomes very interesting reading what we just now read, that when it comes to the Beit HaMikdash, it does take this type of concept and say, no, you can't use chametz over here, you can only use matzah over here, which seems to be saying that when it comes to divine service, that chametz is something which is inappropriate. So, why don't we have the same kind of ethic? Again, I don't want anybody to go and to make up a new chumra now and to say that all bread should not be allowed all year.
We heard it from Rabbi
Tom. You could say you heard it from me, but can I ask you a serious question? How hard do you think it would be to get people to spread such a thing? Okay, exactly what I thought. Yeah. So let's be careful. The Gemara says the other way around. Umima akev, what holds us back from doing God's service? Sa'or Shebi'isa, the first thing which is introduced is Yetzer Hara, Vishibud Malchiot, and the fact that we really don't have freedom, that we are controlled by others. So whether this means that one would argue based on this, there should be complete separation, I think that's a little bit of a, you being a little extreme, you being worse than me even, that it's the Shibud Malchiot. It doesn't say that having anything to do with the non-Jews is a problem. It's Shibud Malchiot. It's the fact that they control us and don't allow us to do that which we want to do. We don't have freedom. What is interesting about this is, that, again, going to be the connection between freedom and between chametz, and therefore you can start telling me, you can put together a whole Dvar Torah now, why specifically on Pesach, therefore we have to express our freedom, and therefore we're not going to have chametz over here, specifically during this week where we do celebrate freedom. But as I said, the question is better than whatever answer I just now gave. If really this is associated with the Yetzer Hara, why are we only concerned with the Yetzer Hara on the week of Pesach and we're not concerned with the Yetzer Hara all year round? So I'm just throwing that out as the first question, but keeping in mind the source that we just now saw, so maybe it's a little bit more interesting. Yeah.
But it's only symbolic of volition. It's not a reality cause. And therefore, you can't apply symbolism across the board.
Okay, I'm willing to accept this, but I'm just saying within the Gemara, when it says that this represents the Yetzer Hara, so if that's the case.
That represents, but not,
Okay, but still, so why does it only represent the Yetzer Hara 1 week a year? Why not more than that? Or maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's more than 1 week a year, represents the Yetzer Hara all year round in the Beit HaMikdash. That's the culmination.
That's the culmination.
Okay. I see. Okay, I'll come back to that. I see that you're an old Maimuna man. Make sure that you have that chametz immediately. I'll come back to that. There is an expression in a couple of different sources The one who collected this and was totally convinced of what I'm about to say was Rav Kasher. Those of you who are familiar with Rav Kasher, you can be familiar with him through what I think is probably one of the most impressive works of any Jew of the 20th century. And that I spoke, I guess it was already almost 10 days ago. I was in Chicago for Shabbos, and one of the topics that I spoke about Friday night was a comparison between modern Orthodoxy and religious Zionism. And I had said certain things, which I'm not going to repeat now. And then Shabbos afternoon by lunch, somebody started to question me a little bit more. So I said, let me ask you a question. What works have been produced by modern Orthodox scholars? I said, you're around for 100 years or so. You want to say 50 years, 80 years? You can make up whatever number you want. Let's say it's been around for 80 years so far. I said, what works have been produced? And for that matter, you can ask another question. What works have produced generally within the... What works were produced in America in the 20th century? In terms of Torah works, what are the most impressive Torah works that were produced? One of them is actually the Torah Shleim B'Baruch Kasher. He lived many years in the United States, and he was the one who actually allowed the Erev in Manhattan. The whole question whether Manhattan represents a natural Erev because it's an island and there's banks which surround it, he was one of the ones that did. Rav Kasher's work, if you've never seen it, is really the most impressive work on Chumash that, as far as I'm concerned, was ever done, with the possible exception of Rashi. The reason why it's so impressive is that he went and he collected every single Chazal on every single pasuk, and then he has notes on it explaining the ideas and so on and so forth. Okay. He also made a Haggadah. His Haggadah was, as far as I can tell, just a case of cutting and pasting. He took his commentaries from Shemot, cut and pasted, and lo and behold, a Haggadah emerged. Okay, that's always a good way to work. When you just to understand how big the Haggadah Shleima is, I don't know how many volumes the original one is. I have a smaller set, which has 13 volumes. The average size is around this. Okay? What's that, around 4 inches or so, is this average size of a volume. So it takes up a whole sense. And it only goes through the end of Bamidbar. It doesn't even have Sefer Devarim within it. He passed away actually before Bamidbar ended, and they did the last... No. He also wrote a Haggadah Shleima. Yes. The Torah Shleima. The Torah Shleima is the work that he did on the Torah. Sorry. And Sorry. Torah Shleima is the one that he did on the Torah. The Haggadah Shleima, as I said, he cut and pasted. If you have the Haggadah Shleima, and you look at the very, very last essay, which he threw in as afterthoughts at the end of the book, he has this whole argument that he puts forward, and the truth is that he argues a little too strongly, which means, I don't want to say he gets carried away, but I think he gets carried away. And what he argues is that on at least a certain level, now that's really the question, is which level, at least on a certain level, chametz should be associated, just in terms of our basic halachic category that we should be comparing it with, he says chametz should be compared to avodah zarah, to idolatry. That chametz should be associated with idolatry. That's the basic argument that he puts forward. Does he have to stretch certain things to make this work? Yes. Let me read the two better arguments that he has. There's actually one really good one, which is the Zohar. But I'll read the other one, which I'm not convinced is as strong as he thinks it is. It's source number 4. Mamakayim Rabbi Yosi yet kriya vivi levokin zivchechem b'malchut yiravam hakatuv medaber. How does he apply this verse? And we'll see what the verse is that he's referring to. It's the verse from Amos, which is in number 5. He says, referring to the malchut of Yiravam. Kevin Shemalach Yeravam al Yisrael had chil mefateh Yisrael. When Yeravam was a king over, again, we have the people of Israel and the people of Yehuda, Malchut Yisrael, Malchut Yehuda. Malchut Yehuda had one huge advantage. And what was that? They had the Beit HaMikdash on their side. The Malchut of Yisrael, therefore, had a problem. Is that people are going to want to come. So he actually put guards to prevent people from crossing the borders and going to Israel, and then he made his own places of worship. One of the unfortunate things that he did, he puts up in Beit El, he puts up a big eagle over there, he puts another eagle in another place, Dan. So over here, it says that Yeravam tried to seduce the people to Avodah Zarah. Kevin Shemalachi or Vamli Israel Tchil Mafated Yisrova Amar Lahen Bov Na Avod Avodah Zarah Avodah Zarah Vatraniti. Avodah Zarah is Mivater. It's easygoing. You don't have to work so hard. There aren't as many rules. I mean, Judaism has lots of rules. It's a pain. And by the way, if there's even worse than the regular rules that we have, are the rules that have to do with the Beit HaMikdash. So it says, why go and join that shul when you can join our shul, which has much more understanding and accepted rules? So again, this is the language of the Yerushalmi, that it puts into Yoravam's mouth, saying, why bother with the Beit HaMikdash? We're modern Orthodox, but we're far more, you want to say reform? We're far more accepting in our religious practices. But actually, the word over here is Vatranidu. HaTorah Amra Lo Tizbach Al Chametz Dam Zivchi. Lo Tizbach Al Chametz Dam Zivchi. Vavoda Zara Amra Vikater Michametz Todah. That, again, the example that he gives is that when it comes to Avodah Zarah, when it comes to the Torah, what does it say? That you can't use chametz within the service. And what do we find when we look at Avodah Zarah? It comes, use the chametz. Now, I'm not convinced that this means exactly what you think it is. If you look at the verse in Amos, it says, Bo Beit El, come to Beit El, Upeshua Gilgal, Harbe Lefshoa, Vivi Levoke Zivchechem, that's the verse that it read before, Lesholoshet Yamim, Masrotechem, Vikater Mechametz Todah, Vikaruna Devotu Shmiu, Kichena Haftim B'nei Yisrael, Na'um Hashem Elokim. Which means the verses over here are talking about the Jews who are sinning and going and serving in other places. Which is the problem over here the Chametz per se, or is the problem over here the fact of the location where they're doing it? So the way that Rav Kasha wanted to read this source is, and we'll see as we move on why this is not so simple, he wanted to read the source as saying, look at the difference in practice. The Beit HaMikdash or the Mishkan insists against any chametz there, and on the other hand, Avodah Zarah does accept. They're very strict and we're far more liberal. Right? That it was that line itself, which I think we can accuse all kinds of sections of Judaism who would use that as part of their platform as to why they should be more acceptable. Vatraniti, they're strict and we're liberal. Let's look at the Zohar. The Zohar is in source number six. The Zohar over here is actually in Parsha Tetzaveh. I've seen those questioned, perhaps it shouldn't be in Tetzaveh, it should really be, the section should be someplace else. And over here, it's talking about Pesach. Ve'alda pakid leikud shebrichu lamichle lahu Pesach b'bihalu, that God commanded to eat the Korban Pesach b'bihalu. Anybody know what b'bihalu means? B'chipazon, that's the Aramaic b'chipazon. You can find that in the Targum Onkelos, b'bihalu, b'chipazon, quickly. Ad dahu sitra achra ishtado be b'iyu v'pakid le'it avra orla minayhu v'kedin itached k'du shabrichu hu b'yisrael v'hu sitra achra et perish mikod shavit ishtadel be b'iyu v'natel midile u'kedin Pesach hu l'Hashem v'adai. Okay. Everything he's trying to say till now is that Pesach is the way of having a relationship with God. That's what he wants to say. Pesach hu l'Hashem. Pesach is God's, so how do you have a relationship with God? By doing the Korban Pesach. By the way, this then will help us, those who don't do the Korban Pesach, don't have a relationship with God, which means that's more or less what the Zohar is starting with. Let me continue with this. The Ad Hashta, lo ava Pesach l'Hashem. Until this particular juncture in history, when God gave us the first time, ordered us to do the Korban Pesach, lo have a Pesach Hashem. It wasn't Pesach for God. Zaka in inon de yadoi umichde yichuda de ma'arihun kidekayaut ktiv. And where do we see this all coming from? Elohema sechalota asulach. Uktiv batrei et chagamatzot tishmar. My hai lagabei hai. What does one have to do with the other? Elohachi ukmiya. Man de achil chametz be Pesach. Whoever eats chametz on Pesach. Kiman de polach lavodukal chavim ihu. It's as if somebody is guilty of serving idolatry, which means the association between chametz and, again, this is worse than the Yetzirah. The Gemara made, again, you can say the symbolic understanding that has to do with the Yetzirah. This passage of the Zohar says that eating chametz and Pesach is associated with Avodah Zarah. Now, where did it get it from? This didn't just emerge out of somebody's, just one day they had this thought. If you look at source number seven, And I'll explain context of source number 7. Source number 7 is in Parshat Mishpatim, which means the initial discussion of Pesach is found back in Perek Yud Bet. HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem, and you should have bring the Korban Pesach. There's also reference in Perek Yud Bet and Yud Gimel. You'll be doing this in the future. Now, by Perek Kaf Gimel, this comes after Har Sinai, we have the following descriptions about the holiday. Holidays. Shalosh regalim tachugli b'shana. As far as I know, this is the first reference to other holidays other than just Pesach. And it says there's three. Et chag ha-matzot tishmor shivat yamim tochal matzot. How is this holiday called? The holiday of matzot. Right? It's not called Pesach. The holiday of matzot. Kasher tziviticha l'ma'od chodesh ha'aviv. Second thing we're told about it is that it's linked together with the spring. Now that's something which is very important, because when you link it with the spring, something's going to happen, which we're going to see right now in a moment. Kivo yatzatim mitzrayim, because that's when you left Egypt. Now, all of you know that the calendar of, let's say, of Islam, for example, which is a purely lunar calendar, so the months will change every year, because in terms of the seasons, in terms of the what we can call the Gregorian calendar or the solar calendar, has 365 days. A lunar calendar would have 354 days. You're going to have a differential of 10 or 11 days every year, so that's going to cause everything to move up earlier and earlier, and unless you adjust the calendar, Pesach won't be in the spring. So by telling you that Pesach is in the spring, we're told here, even though we have lunar months, we don't have lunar years. We have lunar months, which is adjusted based upon a solar year. That's what we're told over here by Chodesh Ha'aviv. V'lo yiru panai rekam, posuk tet zayin, v'chag katsir bikurei ma'asecha, asher tizra b'sadeh, v'chag asif b'tseita shana ba'asfacha et ma'asecha min asadeh. Two other holidays are introduced over here, holidays that we're more familiar by their names, Shavuot and Sukkot, although one should notice over here that they're both being introduced in terms of their agricultural identity, which means all of our holidays have what I would call historical / theological side to them, and they also have a agricultural side to them. If you were to ask me, let's say before we started, why do we eat matzah? So we'll say, not an agricultural reason, rather, what's the reason? It's a historical reason. The Jews left Egypt so quickly, they didn't have time for the bread to rise, and therefore we eat matzah on Pesach, and therefore it's called Chag HaMatzot. Right? That would have been the easiest, most straightforward, the simplest explanation.
That raises an important question to everybody.
The night before. Okay, I'm gonna come back. Hold it right there. I'm gonna come back to that. I'll come back. That's very good. I'll come back to that. But let me get there. By the way, part of the problem about matzah, because again, those of you who didn't understand the question, the night before they were eating matzah already. They were told to eat matzah. If you pay attention to the Haggadah seems to imply, right? This is the poor man's bread that we used to eat in Egypt. Which means it gives you the impression, at least, if you look at the commentary of the Nitziv, it gives you the impression that that was the normal food that they ate in Egypt. On the other hand, I don't know. I don't remember.
Don't know.
Depends how old the Brooklyn Bakery is. I don't know. Right. The Haggadah implies that. The Chumash does not necessarily imply that.
We don't know the answer.
Ba'ara d'mitzrayim.
It implies a food that didn't need long preparation. That can be done quickly, which is why Lot gave them
right. So the... I don't know what to say.
It was expensive.
I don't know what to say. Other than that line in the Haggadah, I would not have suggested such a thing, but there is a problem that Moshe is ordered to have that Korban Pesach eaten that night before they left, eat it with matzah and maror. even though they don't leave to the next day. Look, I would have explained simply to say that they ate matzah the same reason we eat matzah. They knew and they believed that we'd be leaving tomorrow so quickly that it means most generations do that by looking into the past. They did this by looking into the future. They're told they're going to leave so quickly. And the whole essence of that meal was quicker. He says, eat it with your coats on, eat it with your shoes on, eat it, goes white, b'chipazon. I mean, we're leaving. So therefore, to say that they ate it because they believe they're going to leave so quickly, that would be part of the message, and therefore I don't have to say that there's any difference. Now, what's interesting, again, I want to go back to what I started to say. I would have said before we started today, why do we eat matzah? We eat matzah because of the historical aspect. Being that it's historical, it turns into a theological issue as well. Again, they left so quickly. But I would not have connected it in any way with agriculture. Okay? Full stop. When I read these couple verses over here, agriculture was introduced, whether we noticed it or not. How was it introduced? By saying Chodesh Ha'aviv. That this is something which is a spring festival. Once it says it's a spring festival, it automatically connected it to a time of year. And if it's a time of year, so it's not a large leap. Actually, I'm not convinced it's a leap at all, but it's not a large leap to say, oh no, this is really something which is an agricultural issue. That then gets cemented by the very next verse where it talks about the other two holidays which form these three holidays. And the other two are described as Chag Katsir, right? And Chag Asif. These are both clearly agricultural statements, right? When you do the Katsira and when you do the Asifah. So these are agricultural statements, and therefore now I see that all three of them may actually be agricultural holidays. Shalosh ben b'shamei yirei kol zechor p'nei Adon Hashem. Lo tizbach al chametz dam zivchi v'lo yinchelev chagi ad boker. So over here is the verse that we saw referred to in the Zohar before, lo tizbach al chametz dam zivchi, one should not be bringing chametz onto the mizbeach, right? The mizbeach needs to be a place which is pure from chametz. Reshit b'kuri ad machat tavi beit Hashem elokecha, bring the first fruits to Israel, so to the Beit HaMikdash, which again, just now brought Pesach into an agricultural setting, and then lo tavashel gediba chalev imo, not to eat a gediba chalev imo. Now I have to pause a second. What does lo tavashel gediba chalev imo have to do with anything? So pause there for a second. In source number 8, we have chapter Lamedalet, Perek Lamedalet. Over here, it's right after the Chet Ha'egel. That's why I even took it back to the towards the beginning of the chapter, Vayered Hashem Ba'anan, Vayetatsevi Mosham, Vayikra B'Shem Hashem, Vayavor Hashem Apanav, Vayikra Hashem Hashem, Karachum V'chanun, Arachapayim V'chesed V'emet, and so on, Notzeches Alafim, and so on and so forth. Right. Pasuk Yud, Vayomineni Nochi, Kareid Brit Neged Kol Amecha, Amcha, Ayasen Eflaot, and so on and so forth. So this is all right after the Chet Ha'egel, forgiveness, reconciliation, Pasuk Yud Aleph. Now goes into, again, a discussion of the holidays. Shmur lechort et asher nochi mitzavcha hayom minini goresh mipanecha et emori v'kanim v'chiti v'prizi v'chivi v'yusi, which really, what did it just now do? It returned back to the real objective of leaving Egypt, and that's to go to the land of Israel. That's back on the agenda now, and you're going to get these lands. Don't make a covenant with them, and so on and so forth. Pasuk Yud Gimel, ki et mizbechotam titatzun, destroy their places of idolatry, destroy their altars. Pasuk Yud Dalet, ki lo tishtachavela el acher, don't worship other gods, and so on. Don't make a covenant, you'll end up worshiping their gods, in Pasuk Ted Vav. Pasuk Ted Zayin says this can lead to intermarriage. Elohim asecha lo ta'asu lach, and don't make gods. How would you translate Elohim asecha? Don't make molten gods. Don't make graven images. What's the next pasuk after that? Et chag ha'matzot tishmor. That's what the Zohar was concerned about. It was this flow between this anti-Avodah Zohar polemic, which is quite understandable to us coming right after the Chet Ha'egel. Don't go and do these things. You're going to go into the new land. Your track record's not good. At Har Sinai, you already were worshiping a foreign god. Now you enter the land of Israel. Don't make a covenant. Destroy their places of idolatry. Don't fall for them. Don't be seduced after their daughters, and so on and so forth. And what's it? Right? Elohim asech lo taselach et chag ha-matzot tishmor shivat yamim tocha matzot ha-shetiv lamoed chodosh ha-aviv. Now this now is a repetition of what we had back in Kaf Gimel, more or less. Peterechem pasuk Kaf Bet. Going back to the agricultural holidays over here, Shlosh Mem Mishanayir calls the Chorik Pnei Adon Hashem Elokei Yisrael. Pasuk Kafei Lo Tishchat Al Chametz Dam Zivchi. Again, keep away the chametz from the mizbeach. V'lo Yevin Levok Zevach Chag HaPasach. Reish B'Goreid Machat Avi Beit Hashem Elokecha Lo Tivag Shel Gidi B'Chalev Imo. Now, you'll notice that both times over here, Lo Tivag Shel Gidi B'Chalev Imo, sort of gets thrown in over here. The Rambam is somewhat convinced, at least in the Mor Nevuchim, the Guide for the Perplexed, that the prohibition of milk and meat together is connected to idolatrous traits, idolatrous rituals. The reason that he says that, first of all, is context. You find over here, this is how you serve God, but this is not how you serve God. You find it in both cases over here. Don't put the chametz on. Okay. So Rav Kasha then, and I'll just explain it a little bit. It's the Rambam's understanding is that the idea of the calf, which is the calf which is born, and milk, is that they're both symbols of fertility. And therefore fertility symbols were one which were very often found by idolatrous rituals. Many years ago, Professor Kasuto found something by some idolatrous place, and it almost said, most of the letters were listing, but it almost said, Tiva shel gedi b'chalev imo, and he was convinced that supported the Rambam's contention in the Mor Nevuchim. Again, how much what he said was guesswork, and how much is actually there, I don't know. But the Rambam's insistence is that the prohibition of milk and meat is a response and is a polemic against idolatrous practices, idolatrous not just practices, but their fertility practices, and therefore we don't eat milk and meat. Of course, somebody here is going to come and say to me then, well, if that's the case, and you know, there aren't all these fertility practices today, so then maybe we shouldn't allow cheeseburgers. Okay, so at the end of today, I know what you're going to walk away with. You say, what was the shiur about? That we shouldn't eat bread all year, but we can eat cheeseburgers. That was with matzah. Okay, that was the conclusion for today. Okay, I'll deny saying that, but of course, who am I, you know, to deny what you heard? So if Kasha goes one step further and says, well, if that's the case, in the same context, is also lo tishchad al chametz dam zivchi, which means not only is there a prohibition over here of milk and meat found in these contexts, in this polemic against idolatry, we also find this idea of putting the bread on the altar, and therefore he claimed that what it must be is that on the altar, in the pagan rituals, they specifically put bread, and therefore we don't use bread because they do. So as I said, till now, just to recap a little bit, what have we said, what haven't we said? That if there's a problem with chametz, and it really is associated with the Yetzer Hara, then why isn't it prohibited all year? Rav Kasha goes further and suggests that it's really connected to not just Yetzer Hara, it's connected to Avodah Zarah, which is a very specific Yetzer Hara. And he'll then use this to explain why we need to search for it, and why we need to burn it, and why we need to do bittul. By the way, every single thing I just now said is all very interesting in terms of both halacha and in terms of machshava. I mean, for example, if we find avodah zarah, we can't do anything to it. It's avodah zarah already. But if the non-Jew is mevatel, he does bittul. He's mevatel the avodah zarah. It loses its status of avodah zarah. So it's very interesting just to see these parallels. As I said, I'm convinced something's here, but I think Rav Kasha really did get carried away at least a little bit. The Bala Turim in source number 10 writes, V'shem Elohim Acherim, this goes back to Perek Kaf Gimel in Mishpatim, Shalosh Regalim Lom Lachakom Lazeh Tamavodot Ki Ilo Ved Avodah Zarah V'samich Pesach Lavodah Zarah Lomer Ma Avodah Zarah Sarah Bahanav Sarah B'Kol Shehu Av Chametz B'Pesach Asur Bahana'a V'Oseh B'Kol Shehu. saying that the very most of the things which are not allowed in Judaism are not, especially the things that you can't eat, are not allowed with by a kazayit, are not allowed by a particular shit. Why, when it comes to chametz, is it even the slightest amount? Now, again, I can give a whole different answer. If you look at Tosfos, you look at the Ran, you look at others, you could say that no, all year round we have chametz in our house, and that's when we need to search for it and so on. But over here, what he's saying is, no, there may really be this much more of an association between chametz and chametz. Of course, what's the problem? Of course, the problem is, why is it only 1 week a year? Now, my somewhat response to that is, it's not really 1 week a year. It's only 1 week a year regarding Pesach, but it's all year round regarding the Beit HaMikdash. So therefore, again, what emerges from this? Now, there is, however, and this is what you started to say before, and Rav Bezak is not the first nor the only one who's in. I'm just telling you. He's not the first nor the only who's made this suggestion. Rav Yoel Ben Nun has a long article on chametz and matzah, which is worthwhile to see. You can look on his website. It's both in English and in Hebrew. I'm going to, depending on time, I'm going to go further than I think he went. But again, it depends on how much time we have. Yes, yes. Source number 11 is back in this week's parsha. V'zot Torat Zevach Hashlamim, Mashiach Yakriv LaHashem. Im al Todah Yakrivenu, if you're going to bring, first of all, it's a Shlamim. What is a Shlamim for? A Shlamim is a peace offering. Which means I want to create peace between me and God. It's a peace offering. Why am I bringing this particular peace offering? Pasuk Yud Bet says, if I'm bringing a todah. Okay. Now, what is there about a todah, which is actually different from all the other korbanot? Without understanding any of those words there, what I can tell you is that these are three different types of matzah. These are three different types of matzah, which matzah, not chametz, matzah, which needs to be eaten with the korban todah. Pasuk Yud Gimel says, "Al chalot lechem chametz yakriv korbano," but the korban todah is this exception. Other than having those three matzot, you also have chametz with the korban todah. Al zevich todat shlamav. You eat it that day, and you, meaning you bring it that day, you can eat it that night. In the Beit HaMikdash, the day and night is different from the rest of Judaism. In Judaism, the day begins in the night. Sunset is the beginning of the day, and then by the sunset of the next day is the end of the day. The Beit HaMikdash does not follow those rules. In the Beit HaMikdash, the day begins with sunrise, and the day ends with the next sunrise. So over here, when it comes to eating the korban, you're able to eat the korban, you bring it that day, you can eat it all night. Now most korbanot you can eat the next day as well. Over here we have an exception. And of course, what's the only other exception? The other exception is the korban Pesach, which therefore make some kind of comparison. Now, this is a very tantalizing comparison with the Korban Pesach, but of course, there are the differences. The similarities is that the insistence that you eat the Korban Pesach together with matzah, the difference is staring at you is blatant, and that difference is, but this one is also brought together with chametz. Source 12, again, I think we all know this. That's talking on the Korban Pesach, which again, these are, as far as I recall, the only korbanot which only can be eaten for that one day. This may help us, and I'm going to make a leap over here. And again, I'm not the first one to do this. There are others who have threw some of this out. I think I saw some of this in an article by Rav Zolden. Look at. But again, I'm going to go a little bit further than I think he went. Source 13. Right? We're all familiar with this to a certain degree. Mozgulo kosheni. I'm reading from the Mishnah. I'm not reading from the Haggadah. Mozgulo kosheni v'kan ha-ben shoel. You pour the second cup, and here the child asks. by the way, what does the child ask? There's two possibilities. It could be he asked the Manishtana. It could be he asked anything but the Manishtana. The Rambam understands that here the child asks anything that he wants, but if he doesn't know how to ask, then the father teaches him the Manishtana. Vim ein dat baben, if the kid doesn't know, aviv malamdo, he teaches him, Manishtana laila zemekolelo, chibakolet anu achlim chametzu matzah. On every night we eat chametzu matzah. And I want to pause here for a second and say something which you can tell me is unlikely, but I want to try it anyway. Let's make believe for a moment that this whole scene is unfolding in the Beit HaMikdash, which means the Mishnah is not reflecting the Haggadah that we had as kids, or the Seder that we had as kids, or the Seder from 100 years ago, 500 years ago, 1,000 years ago. The Mishnah is reflecting the Haggadah, or the Seder, that was performed by the Beit HaMikdash. My biggest reason for saying that is actually, if you skip a line, Shebechol HaLeilot Anu Ochlim Basar Tzlik Shlukum Uvushal HaLeila Hazeh Kulot Tzli. Every night we'd all kinds of food being prepared, tonight only Tzli. Okay. Now, of course, we don't say this in our Haggadah. Why? Because we don't eat Tzli. Why don't we eat Tzli? Because that's how the Korban Pesach was performed. This line of the Mishnah is a remnant from the time that the Beit HaMikdash existed and they had the Korban Pesach and they ate it only Tzli. We replace this with Kulan Misubim, that we lean back. Again, we lost the Korban Pesach with Reflex Freedom, so we try to find a replacement of the freedom, which will be the leaning back. But and that's interesting that you can say by your Seder and so on. What am I trying to say right now? That the Mishnah here represents either what the child is saying or the words that we're putting in the mouth of the child. And I want to make a suggestion that maybe the frame of reference is not the way that we normally understand the Mishnah, that all year round we do this. What we do all year round is not relevant. Maybe the child is making or the adult is making the reference to what happens when we eat the Korban Todah. Because we come up to Yerushalayim, right? The Korban is brought, we all get prepared, we have an evening, we sit, and we eat the Korban Todah. How is the Korban Todah eaten? Chametz u'matzah. Which means, it could be, especially the intelligent question would be, why by the Korban Todah we eat chametz u'matzah, and why over here by Pesach we're only eating chametz and u'matzah and there's no chametz. So I'm just using that as a possible frame of reference. I will point out in source 14, the Mishnah in Zvachim writes, "Hatodva ayl nazir kachim kalim shechitatam b'chol makom b'azara udumam to'en shtei matanot shel arba v'nachlim b'chol ha'ir l'kol adam b'chol ma'achal l'yom ulalayla ad chatzot." So here's a couple of things about the Korban Todah you may not have known. One, when it says you can eat it at night, it says Tilchatzot. Whether it's the right, the Rabbanan, or the same machloka we find by the Korban Pesach is very interesting, but the Korban Todah is Tilchatzot, we're told in the Mishnah. That was not what we would have understood from the Pesukim. But what's the other thing which is very interesting? Bechol Ma'achal. What does Bechol Ma'achal mean? You can eat it in any way. What does Bechol Ma'achal mean? Batzot Tzlid Shalukum Uvushal. You're able to prepare it in any possible way. Which means, again, if this really is a comparison between the Korban Todah, which means that this would be the more familiar service that people are familiar with, which you can do a number of times a year by the Beit HaMikdash, that would make a very interesting frame of reference. I'll just point out source 15, just one more thing which is interesting. He quote over here, it's Abar Bernel is being quoted, Demivor Lachin Echal Toda Liyom Velayla Bilvad, again, which is the exception, Sha'al Deize Yitrabu HaOchlin Kidei Shelo Tavo Lidei Notar. You eat it so that you're not going to be left over. Memela Be'et She'yeshivu Kulam Yacha Lechol Yisaper Bal HaKorban Chazdei Hashem V'niflo Tav Asher Asa. What are you doing? Why are you bringing the Korban Todah? Because somehow you were saved. You were in a life and death situation, you were saved. So what he's saying is that the Korban Todah requires with it as well to tell the story. So over here, you have the telling of the story. You have eating it until Chatzot or until the morning. You have over here Chametz and Matzah. You have over here eating it in any way. So I'm just saying again that this whole connection with the Korban Todah and the Korban Pesach is one which I think is far more interesting than maybe you would have thought about before we began. Okay, now let's start all over again, and I want to try one more thing to try to put this together in a little bit of a broader sense. In Vayikra Perikov Gimel, this is Parshat Emor, over here we have a reintroduction to the holidays. Again, we have a whole parsha dealing with holidays. Eilam Ode Hashem Ikrei Kodesh Etzikru Otam B'Mo'adam B'Chodesh Rishon B'Baras HaLachodesh Ben Arbayim Pesach LaHashem. 14th afternoon, evening is Pesach. And by the way, the Torah is very consistent. We've discussed this before. It only calls Pesach the time that you bring or eat the Korban Pesach, not the holiday for 7 days. U'mechamishasa Yom L'Chodesh Ozeh Chag HaMatzot LaHashem. The Pesach is from when you bring it till you eat it. So the argument would be, is it till Chatzot or till dawn? So there's overlap between Pesach and Chag HaMatzot. Chag HaMatzot is 7 days, starting with nightfall, the Chamisha Asar. Matzot Tochelu. What's the main thing? Eat Matzot. Going down, Pasuk Tet, V'divei Hashem al Shelei Mor, D'bar B'nei Yisrael, Amar T'Lehem, Ki Tavo Al Ha'aretz. Now that's very specific. And it actually, we should have guessed this from the very beginning. Once we were introduced to agricultural aspects of the holiday, we should have realized right away those agricultural were not happening in the desert. The fact that the holidays were introduced is agricultural, which means Ki Tavo Al Ha'aretz. Ki Tavo Al Ha'aretz, Asher Ni Noten Lachem, Uptzartem Et Tzira, Veveitem Et Omer Reishit Tzartem Al HaKohen. You're going to bring the Omer as this first offering. Correct. Absolutely correct.
Because it wasn't the right setting.
Absolutely correct. Pesach also has an agricultural side to it. And that's what I said. That's what we've learned from the very beginning today. Chodesh Aviv, there's an agricultural side to it. Now, this is going to really establish it, because we're told now, V'nifeta Omer L'fnei Hashem is going to be Mechorat HaShabbat N'fnei HaKohen. It means right after the holiday of Pesach, the first day of Pesach, you're going to lift up the Omer. And the Omer over here, to save us a lot of reading, the Omer here is brought from barley. It's you take the first barley and you lift it up over here, and from this point on, it tells us in Pasuk Yudalid V'lechem Kliva Karmel Lo Toflu Ad Etzem Yom Hazeh. Till this point, Chadash was not allowed. You were not allowed to eat the new grain from the new agricultural year. Once this is brought, you can now eat from the new grain. Usfartin L'Merchad Shabbat, and now you're going to count over here 49 days, and this is going to end up leading you till what we call Chag HaShivuot. Ad Merchot HaShabbat. Correct. I'll come back to that in a second as well. Ad Merchot HaShabbat HaShvi'it Tisperu Chamishim Yom V'hikravtem Mincha Chadasha LaHashem U'mimoshvateichem Taviu Lechem Tenufa Shtayim Shnei Asurim So L'Tiena Chameitz Tafena Bikurim LaHashem. Here is the other exception to the rule. At the end of the 49 days on Chag HaBikurim, we now bring a new offering of bread, and now the Shtei HaLechem, Chametz, is brought into the Beit HaMikdash. If you craft them, Alechem Shivat Kasim, and now this is what you bring with Alechem, and you see the word Lechem used again and again, which means, I would have been tempted to say that Chag HaShivuot and Chag Sukkot are agricultural holidays, and I could say they're not connected to Pesach. With the Omer, they're now connected to Pesach. But more than that, over here, I find I'm allowed to eat lechem. More than that, I bring lechem to the Beit HaMikdash, which means, and you wanted to say this before, I can't separate between the prohibition of eating matzah, of eating chametz, which I would have understood as being a purely historical or theological consideration. I can't separate that from the Omer on the one hand, which leads us to Pesach, to Shavuot, and the Lechem, which is being brought into the Beit HaMikdash now. Now, I want to add a little, I really want to nuance this a little bit more.
How did the time I would be speaking?
So let me nuance this a little bit more. First of all, where is the word Omer used the first time in the Torah? Of course, the easiest thing to do is to remember. The second easiest thing is to look at the next source. Omer is used in the discussion of the man, the amount. The Omer is the amount that fell. Source 17, Pasuk Yudchet, Vayimdu ba'omer, Vayi ba'yom ha-shishi laktu lechem mishna, Shnei ha-omer le'echad. Vayom ha-hu ha-shidi bar-Hashem Shabbaton Shabbat Kodesh, La-Shem Machar. When they ate it, it says, if we go back a little bit before, Pasuk Tedvav, Vayiru Bnei Yisrael, Vayomer Ish Halachiv, Man Hu, what is it? He lo yadu mahu, they don't know what it was. Vayomer Moshe Kim, Hu Halechem, Asher Natan Hashem, Lochem Lochla. This is the bread that God gave us. Okay, let's go back to context. Let's go back to context. The Jews leave Egypt, they carry out matzah with them, and they have it with them for 30 days. At the end of 30 days, on Pesach Sheni, of course there's no such thing as Pesach Sheni yet, they carry it out and they eat the matzah for 30 days. At the end of the 30 days, they have nothing else to turn to, what are we going to eat? The mun falls. Mun, they have no idea what it is, but what is it? It's lechem which God gave us. It's actually an argument what bracha you make on the mun. So one of the opinions is, you say, Hamotzi lechem in hashamayim. Right? And that's exactly based on this pasuk. Others say, you say, Barei mi name is onot. Right? God created all kinds of things which fill us up. But over here, Hamotzi lechem in hashamayim. So it's interesting, over here, we have lechem, we have the omer, we have it when? We have it right between Pesach and Shavuot. So to say that this has nothing to do with anything would be a little bit hard based on all the things that we have seen today, but I want to pause right now. And this is something which I've said a number of times, but I'm going to say it again, and it's still quite preposterous. Something went wrong along the way over here, which means we're supposed to get to Shavuot. We're supposed to get... Now, on the holiday of Shavuot, okay, let's be careful. On the one hand, it's the holiday of Bikurim. On the other hand, Shtei Alechem. We also know that more or less the Torah was received on that time, which means, again, the historical, theological aspect of the holiday, on the one hand. Sukkot, for example. Sukkot is the time that, okay, it's an agricultural thing. What does that have to do with building a sukkah? It's the time they started to build the Mishkan. That's when they actually started to build the Mishkan. So over here, you have this historical side, you have this agricultural side to it. These are not independent. They are absolutely interconnected, which means when God first orders us to eat matzah, God, of course, knows we're going to enter the land of Israel, which, by the way, is reflected by what we saw in Parashat Mishpatim, in Perek Kaf Gimel, where it talks about those other holidays in terms of the agricultural side of them, and insists that Pesach has to always be in the spring. Something went wrong along the way over here. What is it that went wrong? We sinned with the golden calf. Now, when we sin with the golden calf, what does Moshe do immediately afterwards? He melts it down, and he makes them drink it. A process which is surprisingly similar to the process of sota. Okay. The korban which is brought by the sota was a korban of barley. Essentially saying to this woman, you acted based upon base instinctual level, and you didn't act like a human being using your intellect, animal, food, barley. So therefore, you're going to bring a korban which is based on barley. And then again, those of you who are confused, what is a sota? A sota, I don't know what she did behind closed doors. What I do know is that her husband told her, her husband was jealous. Her husband said, this guy I don't trust. He says, don't be secluded with this guy. She goes, checks into a hotel room with this guy. There are two witnesses outside the door. So that's the process of sota, which means she did something wrong. What she did behind closed doors, I don't know. But the fact that she went behind closed doors is exactly the problem. She gets to drink from this thing of the sota, and she brings this korban of barley. So that becomes quite interesting, as I said, as this echo of the Chet HaEgel with the sota-like practice of drinking of the water. On the other hand, the korban having to do with the barley. Now, the fact that the omer, the year before, they're eating the omer, which is the man, and the thing I started to say before, which shocks me again and again, the morning they made the egel, they woke up that morning and they collected the man that fell from heaven and they made a bracha, Hamotzi lechem min hashamayim. And nonetheless, right afterwards, they make this egel and they say, Elo Elohecha Yisrael. I mean, the whole thing is absolutely preposterous, but that's what they end up doing. So it seems to me that the first year, they have lechem min hashamayim, holy bread, but they mess this up, and that's part of messing up with the Chet HaEgel. We come around now, and we find the Omer now is introduced with barley. At this point, we have matzah, this recognition of it's connected with the Yetzer Hara, going from human food but barely, which I'll call matzah. I apologize if any of you like it, but human food but barely. It takes away this creative aspect, this if you want, the Yetzer Hara. We move towards animal food having to do with instinct, this need to control the instinct, which is this other side of the coin, which is done on Pesach itself. We move to Chag HaShavuot when we get to the objective. Now, there's two objectives of leaving Egypt. two sides of the same coin, and they're connected. One side of leaving Egypt is to get to Har Sinai. The other side of getting to of leaving Egypt is to get to Eretz Israel. When I was in Chicago, also I gave a talk on was Sefer Shemot a success or a failure? So I said, according to Ramban, it seems to be a success. The Mishkan is filled up with the glory of God. I said, on the other hand, if you keep looking at the Psukim, going back from the Brit HaBayin HaPtarim all the way to Moshe at the snare, and keep on going, it keeps on saying the same thing, what the objective was. What was the objective? Eretz Zavat Chalav U'Dvash. What's the objective? To get to Eretz Yisrael. Which means, I did say this, by the way. People always ask me, do you say this in Chutz La'aretz? I said, of course I say it. They just never invite me back. I said that the Jews staying in Chutz La'aretz is the failure. They're not supposed to do that. Over here, staying in the desert is a failure. Go. Of course I said it. Of course I said it. I said that's why it's a failure. They're supposed to go straight to Eretz Yisrael. That's why it's a failure. So there's a dual objective. One objective is to get to Har Sinai. The objective is to get to Eretz Yisrael. This is represented by the two sides of Chag HaShavuot. One is the theological side in terms of Har Sinai. The other is represented by going to Eretz Yisrael, bringing your first fruits, going to the Beit HaMikdash, and celebrating by the Beit HaMikdash. These things are both related, which means Pesach is not a complete holiday. Pesach is an incomplete holiday. We leave Egypt. What happens when you leave Egypt? Okay, they left this place full of moral depravity, full of Avodah Zarah. They leave Egypt. Okay, now we're out of Egypt. But they don't have anything to take its place. It's at this point that you have to be particularly careful of the Yetzer Hara. Why? Because there's nothing. It's Sur Mira, but there's no Aseh Tov. There's nothing good which is taking the place. When do we fill it up with something positive? When we get to Har Sinai. At that point, we can eat the Lechem. At that point, we can eat from the bread. What I'm therefore then suggesting, based on everything that we've seen, is that Pesach is not a complete holiday. Pesach is an incomplete holiday. The Korban Pesach is essentially the same as the Korban Todah, with one thing missing. What's missing? The bread. When you eat the bread from the Korban Todah, you eat the bread. The bread is the Shtei Alechem in the Beit HaMikdash on Chag HaShavuot, which therefore links together Pesach and Chag HaShavuot. Who are those who are supposed to bring a Korban Todah? Let's take a look, and this will be the last thing we look at today. Look at source number 18. Omer of Yehuda Amarav, Arba Tzrichim Lahodot. The four people have to bring the Korban Todah to say thank you. The Elohim Yerde Hayam, those who went into the water. By the way, the Jews when they leave Egypt, do they go into the water? I mean, we can debate that. V'holchei midbarot, and people who go through the desert. Did the Jews who leave Egypt, did they go through the desert? By the way, the answer to this should be yes. U'misha yachol v'nitrapeh, which we could not, I'll skip this, I don't want to push it too hard, but it does talk a number of times about leaving Egypt in terms of kol ha, all the illness which was in Egypt, I'll heal you from it, or ani Hashem arofecha, and so on. U'misha hayachavush b'beit ha'asurim, and he was, and the person who was... in prison. Any one of these is a reason to bring a Korban Todah. So what do you think? Do you think when the Jews leave Egypt, they're supposed to bring a Korban Todah at some point and say thank you? So of course they're supposed to. Which means the whole Korban Pesach is supposed to be a Korban Todah, but it's incomplete. Why is it incomplete? So now you can choose your reason. And the answer is it's both. Because we didn't get to Har Sinai yet on the one hand, and we didn't get to Eretz Yisrael on the other hand. Which means that only when these two sides are there, and again, the full agricultural side can now be revealed, and the full theological side is now revealed. Now we have the Torah, now we have the mitzvot, now we have the land of Israel. Now we can actually say Todah. Now we can actually bring the Korban Todah, which means that if what we're understanding here properly is that the Korban Pesach is a Korban Todah, missing the bread, and the bread is filled in with the Shtei HaLechem, which is then brought on Chag HaShavuot. And of course, now what I'm saying is obvious, that the Ramban put it like this. He said that that the 7 weeks of the Omer with Shavuot is the Chol HaMoed of Pesach, as it were. And the Ramban said, but what's he really trying to do? The obvious. Once I count between Pesach and Shavuot, it links the two. So now I'm just asking the obvious. Okay, now that they're linked, okay, Marhivachti, what did I gain the fact that they're linked? They're linked is no. The link is saying that Pesach isn't complete until this last part. And that may very well be this the Korban Todah that we're seeing with eating the bread in the Beit HaMikdash, which means the two exceptions to when you bring bread to the Beit HaMikdash, the Bikurim and the Korban Todah, they may actually be one and not two independent things, and therefore related at least on a level of Machshava. Okay, everybody have a Chag Kosher v'Sameach. Mm-hmm.